across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Where Stevie Ray Vaughan is singing about being caught in the crossfire, and that's how a lot of folks feel, but we're glad you come here for a little bit of relief. Every weekday morning from 6 to 8, it is 7:06 now across the Civic Media Radio Network on this Friday morning, April 5th. Coming up this hour, with an ex-president facing more than 90 counts of felony criming, it can get a little confusing to trace all the developments and possibilities in those courtrooms. Fortunately, we have former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel to join us on Friday mornings as he prepares for his Saturday morning legal show, Amicus, a Legal Brief. So we will be talking to Jim in less than 15 minutes here now. Also, we'll talk about Eric Hovde's position on abortion rights, if we can figure out what that is. Mark Jacob will join us to talk about media coverage of the big stories of the week. And we'll be looking to talk to Dan Schumacher as we head into a weekend full of sports. And let's see, we've got temperatures mostly around Wisconsin in the 20s to low 30s. And kind of a mixed bag. We've got everything from cautions about flooding in the southern part of the state to cautions about wildfire danger in the western part of the state, because it's going to get windy at times this weekend. So wherever you are, please use all the proper amounts of precaution so that you can enjoy the weekend as best you can. The Republican candidate for U.S. Senate, Eric Hovde, made a point of talking about his anti-abortion rights stance in 2012 when he was running in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate, a race that he ultimately lost to Tommy Thompson, and then Tommy Thompson lost to Tammy Baldwin in that 2012 race. Hovde was asked yesterday by Matt Smith from WISN, Channel 12 in Milwaukee, and other reporters in a bit of a scrum there, a little quick press gaggle. He was asked about his current stance on abortion. Now, this runs about 2 minutes here, but let's give it a listen, and then here's what we want you to figure out. Not only is he parroting a lot about abortion rights, but he's also parroting a lot about Donald Trump's big lie by first saying he doesn't want to talk about it, but then he basically parrots every point about it. Let's give a listen.
I'm curious what you think when Trump continues to say things like the election was stolen or he won Wisconsin in 2020, but he didn't.
Look, I'm not here to litigate 2020. I'm running in 2024. I'm running for the U.S. Senate. But I do say we have to get confidence back in our election system. We can't have in 2016 Hillary Clinton saying the election was stolen, causing a $110 million investigation by Robert Mueller that went on for, two and a half years, showed that there was no, Russian interference. And then 2020, the other side loses, and then saying, the election was stolen. Were there issues? Yes. But we've got to move past that. We've got to get confidence in our election process. I'm really happy that the referendums passed, because that's just a step in that process.
What were the issues that you're talking about?
Well, there's many of them, Dan, if you want to talk about them. Zuckerbucks was a very concern, and if a big conservative Republican came into the state and was targeting conservative areas to push out the vote, let me tell you, liberals would be outraged by that, number one. Number two, you look at the nursing homes. Look, I do lending into the nursing home community, or used to. The average life expectancy in a nursing home is 4 to 5 months. How can you have, Racine County Sheriff finding 100% of the people voting? And by the way, elderly parents are dying saying, who voted for my parent? Who did that? That's a legitimate question. You had ballot harvesting in public places. A Dane County judge said it's illegal, but the votes got counted. You had correction of votes. All those things need to be cleaned up. It's wrong. And if it was happening on the other side, people would be outraged. So let's find a system to bring everybody's confidence back into the election process.
Is your confidence back?
Look, is there concerns? Yes, of course. But I don't want to spend my time talking about 2020. I'm talking about 2024.
Well, Well, unless you decide to go on a two-minute rant where you get more hot-tempered and your voice goes up another octave as you hear yourself saying the words, but I got to wonder if you really believe it. I mean, let's look at these things point by point. It's all based in this. We have to get confidence back, he says repeatedly. Do you know why we don't have confidence, or why some people don't have confidence in their elections? Because they're lying about it. And then they let other people know and they say, oh, well, if that's true, then I have real concerns about it. But there has not yet ever been anything in actual evidence presented that causes concern. But of course, we're gonna parrot the talking point that somehow 2016 was the same when Hillary Clinton conceded. We're going to spread the lie about the Mueller report not showing Russian connections when it very much did, but that Bill Barr, Trump's attorney general at the time, downplayed it. And then, Congress did not follow through on anything other than investigating in terms of criminal charges until recently. And there we're seeing it just about the 2020 election, not the 2016 Russian connections. Again, anytime you hear somebody using the word Zuckerbucks, you should go ahead and treat whatever they're saying with a grain of salt. Because the fund that helped give grants to local governments around the country gave them to hundreds of communities in Wisconsin and around the country. Republican areas, Democratic areas. It was to help administer elections and make up for funding that Republicans in the legislature refused to offer. But again, it makes for a convenient talking point about confidence in the election system. He says, what would happen if some Republican came in? Hello, Elines. Hello, Diane Hendricks. We are awash in a Republican coming in and spreading money all around. It's the only reason Ron Johnson is still a sitting United States senator, is that a couple of billionaires came to his rescue, spending big against Mandela Barnes to drag Ron Johnson across the finish line. Ballot harvesting. That's, again, just a convenient way of saying, Grandma, can I take your ballot in for you and drop it off? Which is now illegal or bad, depending on your point of view. It's not ballot harvesting by any stretch of the imagination. Talks about correcting votes. We've had numerous court cases about that. The Election Commission has talked about it, about making sure that if you legally have the right to vote and you transpose a number on your zip code or your street address or something like that, that your local clerk can clean that up. You should not lose your vote because of essentially a typographical error. So when he talks about finding a system to bring everybody's confidence back, here's the system you need. Stop lying about the election. It was fought fair and square. Donald Trump lost. He's been doing everything since then to either overturn an American election, undermine it, or commit other crimes to try to hold on to power. And the sooner people appreciate that and stop spreading his BS for him, the sooner confidence will return to elections. Hovde was also asked yesterday about abortion, and he said in this article by Jesse O'Point in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, saying women early on in pregnancy should have a right to make a choice. Hovde pushed back on a question about how his stance on the issue has changed since he last ran for office in 2012, saying, quote, he has never changed his position on exceptions. But his comment Thursday about a right to make a choice early in pregnancy, Jesse writes, appears to be a shift in his position in 2012 when Hovde said he was, quote, totally opposed to abortion. In a questionnaire at the time, he wrote, I am pro-life and I opposed legalized abortion. I believe contraception should be legal. On Thursday, Hovde said, as it pertains to abortion, look, I'm very clear on the issue. I believe in exceptions. I believe in the beauty of life. I think women early on in a pregnancy should have the right to make a choice, but I think there is a point where once a baby can be born healthy and alive, that it's unconscionable that that baby could be terminated. But what does that mean? Does it mean 22 weeks? gestation? Does it mean 14 weeks? Does it mean 6 weeks? Because clearly he supports restricting abortion at some point. Is it the level of viability that we saw in Roe v. Wade? If so, then why would you favor overturning Roe v. Wade when we had a working system before the Dobbs decision? So we're going to continue trying to pin him down, or at least just ask him repeatedly to find out if this is somebody who wants to remove more of women's reproductive health care rights, and if he believes in the Ron Johnson school of making it harder to vote in Wisconsin and casting doubts on the outcome of elections, even when they're run efficiently and safely, as they always have been here in Wisconsin. Governor Tony Evers signed a bill yesterday to, or on Wednesday rather, to promote flood resilience as we see more flooding because of a changing climate. It was a Republican-sponsored bill, I hasten to add, that will provide $2 million in grants to local governments that take on projects aimed at identifying flood-prone areas and improving resilience. This is something that all communities can do, should do, but again, it gets rather expensive to assess flood risk. I know that my very first earmark in the legislature was for the city of Chippewa Falls to buy some property and remove the businesses in this case because they were getting flooded every few years. And now there is a city park there. It floods for a couple of weeks every spring, as it's supposed to, because it's one thing for a park, a field to flood. It's another thing for it to be whatever homes and businesses are in the way. So if this measure helps more communities take care of flood-prone areas and reduce the amount of damage that happens on an increasingly regular basis, then that, of course, is a big net positive. And I appreciate all of the Republicans who voted for the bill, along with Democrats, to have that get signed. Sports at 7:18. The Brewers start a three-game series at home against Seattle. 6:35 broadcast on News from the Center and Richland Center, WRJN and Racine, Oshkosh Air Support, 98Q Country and Park Falls. Meanwhile, tonight, the Bucks are at home against Toronto. You can hear that starting at 6:30 on locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids and Lake Air in Amory. Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, joins us next to talk more about Trump's legal woes. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north. Be right back. Turns 50 years old today. Catch that. More birthdays and other notes in our daily history lesson at 6:50 on weekday mornings. On weekend mornings from 9 to 11, you get to hear the wit and the wisdom of Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, who joins us now on his newly rebranded show, Amicus, A Legal Brief, talking about everything from election issues, like we just talked about previously, to criminal issues that might involve, say, a former president of the United States. Jim Santel, good morning. How are you?
Pat, it is good to be with you once again, doing well as the news continues to animate much of our discussion throughout the nation.
And animated is right. So let's see if we can cover several things here. Greg, do you want to fill in the gaps? I know we had a caller when I was talking about ballot harvesting, and I want to ask Jim about it. Any particular point or direction from our caller that I can give Jim to address?
Not really so much as the fact that he was defending Eric Hovde's statements and saying that these, you know, what you were saying as far as he wanted to discuss with you how your point was wrong, essentially.
Okay, well, that's fine. That's totally fair. Especially, let's look at this one area, Jim, on so-called ballot harvesting and in nursing homes and saying, well, how could we have 100% voter turnout? First off, we used to have 100% voter turnout in many communities. We just talked about that on yesterday's program. And that if during a pandemic, people are more attuned into being civically engaged, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But Jim, what's your own view on the accusations that, you know, helping elderly people vote amounts to ballot harvesting if their adult kids aren't in the room to sway them one way or the other.
Absolutely. So a linguistic response and also a substantive response. My reference point is a Supreme Court case called Brnovich versus DNC, one of the two cases in which the Supreme Court fairly recently pretty much decimated what's called Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. And in that particular case, they were addressing the legitimacy, the constitutional legitimacy of two statutes coming out of the state of Arizona. That's where the name Brnovich comes from. He's the attorney general there. Two statutes there that restricted the capacity of votes to be counted, not addressing the legitimacy of the underlying vote, but rather the manner in which it was delivered or voted in some way. And one of those two statutes prohibited people in the state of Arizona from picking up, again, exactly as you said, Pat, votes and ballots from individuals who are perhaps remotely located from places of polling. Arizona, you can well imagine many reservations, many other remote areas. And the notion was we were going to pick up these ballots, not to change them, but simply get them into a place where they can be counted for legitimate reasons. I would also say, as an aside, the linguistic part of this, I am not at all a fan. As a matter of fact, I reject the notion that we are somehow harvesting ballots. That sends this notion that somehow we're picking them off and putting them in inappropriately. What you're doing is you're facilitating the voting of those ballots, the presentation of those ballots, in a way that ensures that people can, in fact, have their votes counted. What the Supreme Court said in Brnovich was that those particular statutes could stand under Section 2. And again, I didn't even mention the other one. But it underscores once again this continuing challenge that we have to mechanisms that promote the ways in which people can get access to the polls, the franchise. And so let's stop talking about the notion that somehow gathering votes together and getting ballots into the place where they can be counted is anti-American, anti-voting. It's just the opposite.
It is just the opposite.
Voting got counted.
It is democracy in action. Let's turn to the former president and the arguably the big news of the week from yesterday, that this Trump-appointed judge, Aileen Cannon, is refusing to make a final decision about Trump's absurd arguments that the Presidential Records Act, applies to him when he's, you know, stealing national security documents and storing them in bathrooms. And that the way that while Judge Cannon did reject Trump's motion to dismiss the case, she did it in a way that makes it really tough for Special Counsel Jack Smith to, you know, appeal if she later on decides that the Presidential Records Act does apply to this case. Are you with other folks who are troubled with what she ultimately did, which was a short-term loss but a long-term win for Trump?
Scratching heads and also troubled by it. Perhaps the person who's most troubled yesterday and this morning is a fellow named Jack Smith, who is, as you indicated, the special counsel who has the assignment of prosecuting this case. The fundamental notion, once again, as you most accurately indicated, Pat, was this concept. It is frivolous. It is ridiculous. And that is the legal term. That's the common term for it. That somehow a thing called the Presidential Record Act could be interpreted to say that the classified documents that Donald Trump took with him to Mar-a-Lago were his personal property. Now, we know as a fundamental notion that anything that you write when you were the president, frankly, even the staff of the president, belongs to whom? Belongs to the people of the United States of America. That's fundamentally what this case is all about. So this motion is made. It is a frivolous motion, and she plays around with it for a while, taunts the parties, if you will, and finally, as you indicated, does enter this order yesterday, which brings the issue 90, maybe 85, 90% to some conclusion, saying that no, it does not provide a pretrial basis to dismiss this case. And so in that context, Jack Smith has a win here. The difficulty, Pat, as you just accurately noted, is she also keeps the door open to the notion that she might revisit this down the road. And all of this coming up in terms of the procedural status of the case, she's talking right now about jury instructions, which is driving Jack Smith crazy, plainly, from his responses to all this. He is describing, of course, her position as simply wrong, without any foundation. And oh, by the way, jury instructions are the kind of thing you can do and say the month before a trial goes ahead in this case. We've got no trial date in this thing at all. And that's the frustration here. If she does, in fact, resurrect this issue right before trial, the difficulty, the procedural difficulty, the reason why this is so maddening, if you will, is that it then does, as once again you indicated rightly, Pat, rob the prosecution of the capacity to seek appellate review or some remedy on that fundamental notion that the act here, the Presidential Records Act, prevents a prosecution here. If she, in the context of jury instructions, instructs the jury that the PRA, as a matter of law, cannot be used to find the defendant, Donald Trump, guilty, case over. And then you have already impaneled a jury, jeopardy is attached, and you are done. That's why Jack Smith has some alternatives right now, including a number of two or three different things which are still on his plate.
But every one of those things and everything about this case is delaying it and slow walking it, which again only leads to the suspicion about whether Judge Cannon is more loyal to the law or to the man who appointed her. Got 60 seconds left. Tell me what else we can expect on Amicus tomorrow morning.
Sure. So we're also going to chat about this related issue coming out of the Georgia case just yesterday, Scott McAfee finding that the First Amendment, free speech, does not preclude the prosecution in that Georgia case from going ahead. Also dismissing yet another frivolous argument brought by Donald Trump and his lawyers. He can do that, but the judge decisively there, unlike Judge Cannon, decisively saying no First Amendment right when you are inciting, basically, you are encouraging people to undermine an elective process.
Man, we are going to learn so much on Friday mornings at 7:20. Jim, thank you for agreeing to come preview the show with us. Hope it's a great show tomorrow, and hope you have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure, Pat. We'll see you again next week. Take care.
You bet. Mark Jacob joins us next. Paula Cole is 56 years old today. Happy birthday to her. We're joined now on this Friday morning by Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune, author of the Stop the Presses newsletter. The title this week, Let's Be Fair to the Facts, Not to the Gullible. You are speaking my language, Mark. Good morning. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you, Pat?
Doing fine. And we talked earlier in the hour about Republican Senate candidate Eric Hovde saying, I don't want to talk about the past. I want to talk about this year. But then he went on the entire laundry list of misinformation that the Trump campaign has been putting out about 2020. And it has created, a real false sense of troubling election irregularities to those who could be described as gullible. And that does not mean, Mark, that you have to both sides every news story to cater to it.
Well, the idea that we're going to turn everything into opinion and there's no such thing as a fact anymore is really alarming. And I wrote my newsletter based, mostly I was inspired by Fareed Zakaria on CNN's guy who wrote it in the Washington Post about how, well, they really should have let Ronald McDaniel be on NBC because, here's what he put it. He said, we have to have a voice for these people who are election deniers and believe the election was stolen in 2020. Quote, do we cancel them all? Should no one who has these views be allowed to speak on NBC News? I think the executives at NBC were trying to find a reasonable way to have the views of 85 million Americans represented on their airwaves. So, whether it's true or false, we got to represent it on the news, which is, to me, daffy.
Yes, I think daffy is just the right word for it, because, again, it's cliche, but it needs to be said again and again and again, is that a journalist's job is not to say, well, he says it's raining and she says it's not. The journalist's job is to open the damn window and tell you if it's raining or not. It's not that hard.
Well, I looked it up and according to the polls, 6% of Americans think the moon landings were fake. 6%. That's millions of Americans who think that. So Do we need to get kind of a moon landing denier on TV to every time we have any kind of space news to explain to us that the whole moon landings thing was faked? I don't think so, but because it's wrong. But this idea that, I mean, that to me is one of the most important things to understand, that right-wing propagandists want to turn every fact into an opinion. They want you to think that there's no such thing as facts, that it's just, well, I believe this, they believe that, you know, and that's why they can get away with this. You know, here we are, you know, more than 3 years after one of the most appalling events in American history, the mob storming the Capitol and this plot to put fake electors in, you know, in effect, an attempted coup. And 3 years later, here we have people saying, well, you know, there's something to it. It was the FBI put them up to it. And all these things that are just not true and have no basis in fact. And and people need to be able to separate opinions from facts.
You're on mute, Pat.
I'm sorry. Thank you. That job gets to be more difficult, though, when you have network level journalists like Kristen Welker saying, as she did last Sunday on Meet the Press, that Trump's attacks on a judge's family and other unhinged rhetoric is, in her words, a reminder that we are covering this election against the backdrop of a deeply divided nation.
Right.
So boy, does that do a disservice.
Well, you know, Pat, it's all of our fault that the Republicans are lying about everything. I mean, I feel personally very guilty for the fact that here I am sitting in my home, and I'm partly responsible for the fact that MAGA Republicans lie all the time. I don't know why I am, but according to Kristen Welker and other people, I am, because I'm part of the political divide. And this is where, you know, you get this kind of diffused responsibility for things. You get the idea that, well, we're living in divided times. The political divide is causing so much problem. Well, you know, here's what's really happened in America in the last few decades. The Democrats, whether you believe in the Democrats or not, or whether you're for them or not, Democrats have pretty much been the same way. They're the same way now as they were 20 years ago. They've been pretty consistent on what they believe in and what they don't believe in. Meanwhile, the Republicans have taken a sharp right turn into fascism, are now for authoritarianism, don't believe in democracy anymore, want, you know, to incite mobs to attack buildings, want to, you know, deny, you know, election results. And so there is a big divide in this country, but it's not because both sides kind of did crazy things. It's because one side did crazy things and the other side, again, whether you agree with them or not, has remained consistent and pro-democracy.
And yet to call out the extreme behavior, you know, because it is so far extreme, by saying what the facts are, what the truth is, they say you look partisan. Right. Well, yeah, because you're closer to the group that hasn't changed compared to the extremists.
Well, right.
I want to throw some audio up here from a Texas Supreme Court justice, not so much to react to what he says, because it's ridiculous, but if you're a journalist in Texas or nationally, you know, how do you cover something like when a state Supreme Court justice like this guy, John Devine, a former anti-abortion activist who calls church-state separation a myth, he's now a state Supreme Court justice. And here's something he said at a dinner or something the other day.
Every day there are abuses to First Amendment religious free speech issues and so forth. Election laws, look at the election law abuse that happened. We're still fighting that. That's still out there. It's going to happen again. Do you really think the Democrats are going to roll over and let Trump be president again? Do you think they're just going to go away and all of a sudden find Jesus and be an honest election? I don't think so. I think those kinds of cases are going to be back to us.
This is a sitting state Supreme Court justice in Texas. You're a reporter in that room. Can you report on that? And can you convey it, accurately, or do you have to say the justice was factually challenged or some other couching language?
I think you can say pretty flat out that he's whipping up these paranoid visions that there's no basis in fact for. And that, I mean, the funny thing is, Pat, The last election, the 2020 election, I mean, I was in journalism for 40 years. So I, you know, covered a lot of elections. And, you know, I was worried at when 2020 happened because it was so divisive, politically divisive, because Trump was, you know, so, you know, anti-democratic. I was worried there was going to be problems, hijinks, just messes at elections. Because, you know, when you conduct an election, funny things can happen, even accidentally. It's a complicated process. So I was worried that 2020 was, we're going to see some weird incident somewhere, and Trump and everyone else, you know, who is on his side, was going to make a gigantic deal about it and make people distrust the election. But what turned out was, by my experience covering elections, the cleanest election of national election of a president in my lifetime. I mean, there were hardly any weird incidents or, you know, missing ballots or, you know, any of that crap. There was almost none of it. I mean, it was amazingly clean and well run. And, you know, you look at Arizona, where they made a big deal, they went back and looked at it, and it was really done well. The election was conducted well. So you have that. And I was disappointed, but I shouldn't have been surprised to see that the Republicans, whether they had any evidence of election problems at all, were going to just invent them. They were going to invent Italian satellites, you know, changing votes, or, you know, sneaky smart thermostats on the walls changing votes. That's a new allegation of theirs. Or Hugo Chavez, the Venezuelan dictator who had been dead 9 years, having concocted a plot for, you know, to steal election from Trump. So they're going to invent it anyway. And you know, rhetoric like that Texas guy just put out there makes it really clear to us that we need to win this election. And I say we. I'm not even talking about the Democrats. I'm talking about people who believe in democracy. I'm not a Democrat. I'm an independent, but I'm very anti-fascist, and the Republicans scare the devil out of me. So we need to win this election by defeating, you know, him there. But even if that happens, and I sure hope it does, I just think we have to expect the same old rerun of 2020. I think they're going to invent a new set of lies. There'll be, instead of Italian satellites doing it, it'll be laser beams from Russia or something. Who knows what?
Always be that next story. Let's talk about how economic news is played up or downplayed, because it seemed throughout the at least the early days of the Trump administration that anytime the stock market did well, we heard about it, because Trump being a businessman and all. It sure seems underplayed most recently, and the news just out a couple of minutes ago that employers added another 303,000 jobs in March. Still a very robust labor market. Unemployment has fallen again. It's down to 3.8%, but it just... seems like you don't hear that. Instead, you hear about the vibe that people feel like they don't have a great economy. The Marquette poll this week, or no, I'm sorry, it was a Wall Street Journal poll this week. 63% of people said, oh, they think the economy is fair or poor, but 57% said the economy in their state is just fine. So it's all right. This vibe that right. How do you get newsrooms to go back to covering the news and not what people have convinced other people they should be feeling about the news?
Well, I think that part of this is a messaging problem by the political parties. And you know, you remember when Trump was president, he was always talking about how great the economy was. It's great, it's great. I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, the economy was fine, but you know, that was because, you know, if you remember when Obama took office, that we had a huge crash before he took office. In fact, that's partly why he won. And he cleaned it up, got the economy going in a good direction, and, you know, Trump took advantage of that. And then, until he put it on the rocks by his complete mismanagement of the pandemic. But and then here Biden is has cleaned it up, had to deal with inflation, which was kind of an expected result of putting a bunch of money into the system to help people during the pandemic. But now inflation is kind of in a good place. You know, and the jobs thing is fantastic. I mean, and here's the thing though, Patty, it's kind of tough because you drive past the gas station every day and you see the, you know, there's price gouging by the oil companies. They're making record profits. So that's not Biden's fault. That's the oil company's fault. But you drive past the gas station every day and you see the prices, they seem high to you. That's different from the fact that if you have a job, you're not going to thank Biden for it, even though the jobless rate is so low and has remained low for, you know, for virtually his entire time in office. And I mean, that's a great thing. That here's an example, though, of how news media kind of just have to be reflexively negative about stuff like this. Just the New York Times today has a headline that says the market may have finally hit a real record, but it could be a problem. I put it on Twitter and I said, New York Times keeps New York Timesing. I mean, they love the New York Times. But back to my main point, which is that the right wing always repeats all this stuff. The left and the center, the reasonable people, the pro-democracy people who understand that Joe Biden is doing a fairly good job, they don't repeat stuff like that. They think, oh, the economy's doing well, and that's it. They don't say it every day. They don't like repeat it to each other. They fail to understand that in marketing, repetition is super important. And I think that's part of the problem.
Oh, without a doubt, it is part of the problem. I always push back on those who say, you know, it's only up to, you know, one party or the other to, you know, have a more disciplined messaging about the campaign. I get that, but it's also something where, again, I would like to see newsrooms do less on vibes and more on, right, you know, here's what we're actually getting. But it's always easier to find somebody who's grousing about their own personal circumstances than it is to find somebody that says, oh, everything's great by me.
Although I think we're seeing the opposite here. I mean, I think in some of the polling, you find that people say, oh, the economy's doing badly, but I'm doing okay myself, which is an interesting, you know, dynamic. And what it really means is that somebody told them the economy's doing badly.
Yes, that's exactly it. For all of this and more, you can get Mark's newsletter at stopthepresses.news. You can also see the newsletters from Mark, from Kiev Akil, Kyle Tharp, Melissa Ryan, and others at couriernewsroom.com. Mark Jacob, thanks so much again. Have a great weekend.
Talk to you later.
All right, when we come back, Dan Schumacher's here. We'll get the weekend started, talk a little sports, and maybe spring finally showing up all across northern Wisconsin. You're up north. I don't know the song, so I heard it drop out. I'm like, wow, that's a really short song by the Grateful Dead.
It's their shortest ever.
Yes. What do we got there, Greg?
What do we got there, Dan?
I can't remember now. I can't remember the name of the song. I know the song.
Called Doing That Rag.
Doing That Rag. Yep, it's an oldie. Yep.
Yeah. Wow. I always get the deep cuts for you, Dan, because I respect your deadheadism.
as well you should. All right. Let's get set to jump into the weekend here. Brewers back in action, start a 3-game homestand against Seattle. I think Freddie Peralta's on the mound. How are your Cubs doing?
How's Council doing is my question.
Who?
Council.
Who's that new manager. Yeah. How's he working out?
You accidentally didn't say Pat Murphy. He's doing great.
You know, I don't think they found their stride yet, but, I think they're right around 500, but I've been a little busy lately, so I haven't really been. The only thing I have enjoyed is the Final Four or the Elite Eight, especially the women's side has been just unbelievable. Cubs are the Cubs. I don't know what to make of them, but I do like the way the Brewers are playing. I like the way they're hitting the ball. Man, are they hitting the heck out of the ball, so.
They really are. It's been a good start. Dan and I have had a text chain going back years now, along with our friend and neighbor, Art Hebert. And it seems to be, if you were to scroll through it, it is entirely rooted in either a white flag with a W on it or a white flag with an L on it, as one taunts the other with each Cubs victory or defeat. I sometimes worry, Dan, how much memory on our phones is taken up by the same two damn photos over and over again.
Right again, right on. That's exactly right. I think you were the most recent one to send me an L.
I might have been. I've been told I'm passive aggressive that way sometimes.
That just sounds like aggressive aggressive.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Let's move on from that.
Midwestern.
The Milwaukee Bucks are back in action as well. I think it's time to say, and I don't have the stat in front of me. I read it yesterday, But between Lillard, Middleton, and Antetokounmpo, since Doc Rivers took over in mid-January, they've played whatever it is, like 40 games, and they've only played all together in like six or something like that. So they've either picked the right time to be have their injuries, and now it's going to all come together for the postseason, which is right around the corner here, or it's indicative of, you know, how things may not go so well in Milwaukee when all is said and done. It's,
you know, I saw a statistic that showed that the comparison of the same amount of games, 40 games, I think, of Doc Rivers and the previous coach. And the previous coach was winning 75-80% of the games, and Doc Rivers is at 500.
Yeah, I saw that graphic too, and I was like, ugh.
Yeah, it doesn't look good on the Brewers' administration and ownership that it's turned that way. You know, they got rid of somebody who was winning to have somebody who's at 500.
So we'll have to continue following how that's going to go. Did you watch in the women's tournament? Did you watch that LSU Iowa game?
I tell you what, I couldn't get away to go take a water break. I mean, I was entranced in to watching the athletes that were on the floor. I never seen a women's basketball game as athletic and as dominant from one person's performance. It was kind of a good versus bad type, the evil story of the two top players going at each other. I thought it was wonderful. It was unbelievably entertaining, and you saw the numbers. It was the highest watched women's sport ever on TV. So I loved it. Hey, I like the way we're going in this weekend for the Big Ten for Purdue in the Final Four. I think it's going to be a great for Eddie, the big center. Their matchup versus the other guy from North Carolina State. So,
oh yeah, that's right.
It's going to be a heck of a battle with the two bigs down low.
Two big men. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't watch the game, but what I got from all the coverage was essentially something that said, "Look, stop waiting for, you know, Caitlin Clark and
Angel Reese."
Angel Reese, thank you, to like, you know, suddenly square off like that Rangers Islanders hockey game night before last. They drop the opening puck and suddenly five fights break out at once because they all couldn't wait to fight each other. And that's what they were thinking was going to happen with Iowa LSU. And what, you know, the vibe they're getting from these two women are, yeah, we're fierce competitors, you know, on the court, but stop trying to make this some kind of personal soap opera. You know, stop punching us for being competitive.
Yeah.
They were at each other. I mean, Caitlin Clark said after the game, she's the greatest trash talker in women's basketball. So she did acknowledge that they do have a little bit of a competitive
on the court. Yeah. They should. Absolutely. Yeah. But I think they took great pains to say off the court, it's not personal, you know?
Yep. It was wonderful to watch, though. I can't wait to watch this next game with Caitlin, see what she does. And it's going to be a great weekend of basketball. There's no doubt about it, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, last night there was a great basketball. If you watch the NIT final.
Who was that? Seton Hall?
Yeah, it was Seton Hall and Indiana State. And Seton Hall hit the last second shot to win it to beat Indiana State, which they probably both should have been in the NCAA tournament, but they weren't. They wound up and doing this. And
well, that was one of the questions that had come up is that while the seedings all appeared to be pretty good and solid, it's that some other teams that were worthy, you know, didn't get in, and that you know, was more about the selection rather than the seeding. And so you mentioned a couple of teams that maybe should have gotten in. I just think that when you're doing 68 teams, I mean, you're going to be able to second guess anything that you want. And yeah, some good teams aren't going to make it. You know, you got a conference that puts five teams in and you go, well, what about the sixth team? They're really good. Well, yeah, but they're also sixth for a reason. They might be in a really good conference, but you know, there's got to be a cutoff line someplace in there.
Yeah, there has to be. I mean, 68 teams is a very diluted bracket. I mean, it's, you know, you're going to have upsets. It's all geared for that.
Yeah.
So but that's what makes the intrigue.
I don't remember if I asked you last time we visited. I don't remember if the River Falls women had ended their season yet, their perfect season with a national championship.
How 31-0. 31-0.
That's just so amazing.
Just got named National Coach of the Year, the hockey coach up for River Falls. I'm happy. Crystal Lanning is the AD there. She's a wonderful leader. She actually is younger. She actually played for me. She was a goalie in college at Winona State. But Crystal, known her a long time since she was a student athlete, and she did a wonderful job with those programs. Awesome. River Falls is really coming on as a total program. Their football team had a great season again this year. They're doing well.
That's great. Congratulations to them. Dan, thanks so much. Have a good weekend. Probably see you around.
You betcha.
Greg, have a great time at the Laughing Tap.
And, see you, Dan.
And then also on Matt and Air on Air a little bit later on this morning. Well, Up North News is the Wisconsin digital outlet for Courier, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a wonderful weekend. See you back here bright and early Monday morning.